Hello and welcome to Beautiful Minds, an exploration into the minds of creative people and what makes them tick. This show is brought to you by Audio Journal and sponsored by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. Opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. The goal of this program is to offer insight into the beautiful and creative minds of all types of artistic people right here in the New England area. I'm your host, Tom Hurley, and before we get started, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about myself. I've been a musician, singer-songwriter, and an artist since 1986, and in that time, I've had the distinct pleasure of meeting so many truly talented people in this area. Musicians, artists, songwriters, screenwriters, beautiful minds that expand the entire creative spectrum. And so I thought it might be fun to sit down with some of these folks, some that I've known for many years, and others maybe I'm getting to know just like you. My guest today is Kerry Anderson. In addition to being an educator in the plastic arts, Kerry is an incredibly talented singer, songwriter, and an artist working with paint, clay, sound, and, well, just about anything she can get her hands on. Not too long ago, I met with Kerry to talk about her recent journey to Colombia, as well as all of the other proverbial irons she's got in her fire. Let's get right into it. Kerry Anderson, thanks so much for agreeing to meet with me today. And why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
I guess I've lived in Worcester for 20 years. Hard to believe. Because I'm not originally from Worcester, I'm from Sutton, okay. Not too far away.
Yeah,
but I moved away to Chicago and studied art, mostly studio arts. I went to Columbia and graduated in 2000. Stayed out there for about 6 years. I took a semester off and traveled the country for a year and lived out of my car.
Wow,
that was a great experience. I'm just trying to think of all the things that led me back to Mass.
Yeah.
I wanted to be back in Mass because I had no family connections in the Midwest, and I miss the ocean greatly.
Yeah.
Hated the winters. Came back to Mass to be around my family again, and I was pregnant within the 6 months that I got back to Mass. I had a dog, a job, an apartment, and a baby all within a year.
Oh, wow.
So I really had to, like, hustle.
Mm-hmm.
But all the while I was painting in Chicago. When I came back, I met an old friend and he was in a band.
Yeah.
He was in Mocha Java, Dave Smith.
Okay.
I grew up with him.
Sure.
He's one of my longest, oldest friends from around here. And he's like, "Oh, I'm in a band. You want to be the singer?" I'm like, "Yeah." So I was in that band first, and it was called Mad Dog's Brother. And it was a couple guys from Brandeis, him, me. We wrote original stuff. And it wasn't very... I think we played at Tammany a couple times. That's about it.
Yeah.
But we did it for like 2 years, I think. And then I had my daughter. I was pregnant when I was in that band. I had my daughter. And then I started playing. I met my husband, got married. And he introduced me to another guy friend who was a lot older than me. He was probably 30 years older than me at the 40 years older than me at the time.
Yeah.
And his name was Rocky Cram, and he lived in Boston, and he was a very eccentric artist and musician, and we just became best friends, and we ended up being in a duo together called Whalebone Farmhouse.
Okay, yeah.
And then we added Jeff Birch and John Riley in the band, and it became a four-piece, and we played mostly at Beatniks and all around. Rocky and I would play in Boston as a duo. We'd do a lot of duo gigs up and down the East Coast, and we did that for about 7 years, six years. And from there, I was kind of getting bored. I wanted to write more of my own stuff, and I was playing guitar a little bit more. And so I kind of used Nicks as my inspiration, the old Nick's bar in Kelly Square.
Yep.
Because when you walked into that place, the way Nicole, the owner, had it at the time, it was just so lending itself to like speakeasy music, like jazz.
And
a little bit more artistic female cabaret or anything. So I started singing there, but only under the band name The Big Lonesome. So I would hire piano players and chart all my music out, all my original stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it was kind of cool. That band was like a mixture between folk, jazz. Well, Whalebone Farmhouse was like traditional folk blues. Mm-hmm. And then it moved to The Big Lonesome, which became more of like jazz, folk, fusion with blues and soul. Mm-hmm. So I've never really strayed away from blues. Blues has always been like my main line.
Yeah.
And then the soul obviously follows. Mm-hmm. And then because I probably in my college years, I learned about the Grateful Dead and all that.
Yeah.
Never wanted to follow them, but yeah. I think I saw one Fish show. Of course, I think being where I was, mm-hmm. and hanging out with the people I was hanging out with that were severe deadheads and they were like 10 years older than me.
Yeah.
I felt like that's how I was introduced to them more, mm-hmm. so because yeah. when I was in high school, I was a little too young.
Yeah.
And in Chicago, you know, there's a big following. But I crossed paths with folk music because a lot of the songs I heard in traditional music was like replayed, and then blues came in there, and it was the same. It was from a different, you know, different parts of the South, you know, so like it kind of just all made sense to me, and that was kind of like my own education. I educated myself on, you know, blues, and I yeah. took a blues harmonica class, and I learned even more mm-hmm. about the different kinds and styles of blues. So I got really into blues in my early 20s and then just kept learning about music and developing bands and just like working with so many people in and around Boston in this area and recording and like doing different things with different people. I'm like a huge collaborator.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of my gifts is that I'm really good at songwriting mm-hmm. and collaborating with other musicians.
Oh, because, that's good to know. Because I'm always looking for a good female singer. I do all my own high parts. And mm-hmm. It'd be fun to have someone else do that. So music, obviously, always a part of your life from when you were a child right on up.
Yeah, so I came from a musical family. Even though my mom and my dad, they didn't play an instrument, they had music on all the time. My mother, later on, I guess when I was learning about performance, I actually tried out at 16 for Emerson. I thought I was going to be some kind of performance.
Sure.
Musical performance or a theater. Mm-hmm. I was really like all into that in high school. I loved the stage. I felt comfortable on it.
Yeah.
And I sang for a lot of benefits. My mother took me everywhere to try out everywhere for everything when I was really young. Mm-hmm. So I was on the stage since I was probably 11.
Okay.
10, 11.
Yeah, well.
Maybe a little younger.
Yeah.
And I think I did my first solo in church when I was like 5.
Yeah.
So I was comfortable with it. I was so intrigued by, I didn't even necessarily like the attention.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to like feel confident with my voice and find myself. Even when I was at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And I still am trying. So
yeah.
It's a process.
It's an evolution for sure. Yeah.
It's a journey.
So as a child, what were the biggest influences musically?
I listened to a lot of soul music. My aunt turned me on to soul. Mm-hmm. I mean, here I come from a Swedish background. Both sides of the family are, you know, Finnish and Swedish.
Yeah.
So we grew up in the church singing really traditional hymns in Swedish. And
sure.
I remember I had to sing in Swedish for my grandfather's funeral. You know, like, so mm-hmm. like singing from a book and singing within a group was something that was part of our culture and upbringing. And my cousins all sang. My parents would have us singing and performing for us all the time, mm-hmm. for them all the time. So it was like something that was cultural for us.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
religious. I came from I don't know if it's typical to be religious. I don't know. I just know I come from a religious family. I went to church and that was
Yeah.
is religious.
And so Scandinavian countries, is it more like
Protestant, Lutheran
sort of thing? Yeah.
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 So within that, it's very, you know, dry hymnal music, mm-hmm. no room to move your voice. And it's very boring to me.
Yeah.
So I grew up kind of resisting it. And I didn't have that kind of voice. The way I felt music was that very deep soul.
Mm.
And even as a kid, my mother has recordings of me singing, and it wasn't a traditional voice. Like, if it wasn't like a churchy voice, you know,
sure.
like, oh, like a, so I had a long time to think about my identity, and I just was always attracted to soul, black music. Mm-hmm. And I was driving with my aunt in the car, and she would just only be listening to that. So it was really my aunt who brought black music into my life. And then after that, I just loved soulful black music.
Yeah.
When I say black, I mean from the South, mm-hmm. gospel music, all of that.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how old I was, but it was always part of my life as well. Mm-hmm. So I had that like duality. Like, it was really weird.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I wouldn't have, I mean, I've heard you sing, and you can hear that influence. I mean, we both grew up in the Worcester area, and for me, it was always like WAF and rock and roll, you know,
yeah.
pop music and that sort of thing, which is...
So my dad he's the rock guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up, he would be listening to, I just remember his green Eternity shirt on and his like mustache and his, you know, like the early 80s, late 70s. It was just such a funny time. But I remember him listening. He loves Sting, though. I don't think I met anyone. He's the biggest fan of Sting. I haven't met anyone who's bigger fan than my dad of Sting.
Interesting, yeah.
But as he grew up, his musical styles, he's very open-minded. Mm-hmm. And, like, I love that about my dad. But he was into, like, you know, Eric Clapton, typical, you know, white bread rock.
Sure.
New Englander, blue collar. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
But typical.
Right.
My mother was more of like a folky. She loved like Joni Mitchell. She loved all that soft, like nice folk. And she even picked a guitar. She had a Spanish guitar.
Oh, nice.
She had like nylon strings. So she was more like that. They were not hippies. They were too young to be hippies.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you have siblings?
I have a sister and a brother.
Okay. Yeah. Are they also musical or artistic? No.
They're both artistic.
Oh.
And my brother definitely is a great writer. Like, mm-hmm. He's a very deep soul. But my sister, she loves art. She would love to quit her job and just do art.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't do it. My grandfather was a painter.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom can paint. And she paints from time to time. But my grandfather painted all the time. He was an engineer for the war and painted, like, you know, very realistic landscapes like this and I'm seeing all around me.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a photorealist, I guess that's what they call it. I was just talking to someone about I did a painting of someone's dog, and I did a very painterly, more impressionistic, and they were not happy with it because they're so used to seeing what I do, you know. So, but I've got to break into other stylistic things, which brings me to my next question, which is, of course, you are a painter and an artist. As much as I paint, I never really knew that, you know, they call it the plastic arts, you know, the things you can hold and touch and that sort of thing. But can you talk a little bit about that?
Wow.
Tell me how you got into all of that.
I know we're going to go deep. I have so much to say about being an artist, a female artist, a painter. It's, for me, since I was 17, and I didn't stop, I found over time, now we'll fast forward, I just want to say that it's really important to explore materials and try everything and anything you want. And it's hard because sometimes you get stuck painting something that you think, especially with our technology these days, everyone's an artist. Everyone's a musician. Sometimes you are, instead of painting for yourself, you're painting for what you want others to see and to view you as. And I don't feel like that's authentic.
Yeah.
And I think for me, I'm just really trying to paint for my authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been so hard to do that. I'd get commissions for portraits. And I am an expressionist painter.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I can do every style of painting. I can do photorealism. I can do, and I'm not saying I do any of these really well, but what I find true to myself when I like something, it's when I've really had that communication with that material and that conversation that it talks back to me.
Hmm. Interesting.
If that makes any sense.
And
everything else that I do, highly critical of and I don't like.
Yeah.
So if I'm looking at something and painting something and trying to make it look like something, it's a good practice.
Yeah.
Put it that way, but I don't love it.
Yeah.
It will never be what I love.
Yeah.
You know, for myself.
do you find yourself, are you highly critical of your own work?
I'm a highly critical person anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because I went through education and I've just met so many amazing artists. Mm-hmm. And I think the conversation of, I think having the conversation with artists about the process is huge.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've had that conversation enough with artists.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of just started and I went away this past summer for a month and really delved deeply into the process and trusting it. And I went to the residency. But aside from that, I learned that you have to trust the process. And I say this to my students because I'm also an art teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do it myself. And so I worked every day for a month in a studio, which was great, in the middle of nowhere in the mountains in Colombia. And with a, you know, an artistic group of people, musicians, artists, all different kinds, soundscape people. And we all worked and we commenced and we talked and we had, I had one critique when I was there and I loved this, the community that I was with was Arte Sumapaz.
Mm-hmm.
It was great because I found it online. I just Googled the best residencies in the world. I needed to get away for a month because I can. And I wanted to work on my art without spending so much money and like having it be a longer stay opposed to like a 2-week stay and spending like $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very affordable and I found I was able to stay there for a month. I could have stayed there longer.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot about myself, my work ethic, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, you're making so much art. And I was working big because I had a huge space.
Yeah.
I was able to spread out. I was able to write and process everything I did every day. I kept a journal.
Oh, that's cool.
I was able to be in nature 24 hours a day for a month and eat vegan food from the earth.
Yeah.
I felt so healthy in the mind and it was a great experience and it changed my life. And it took that long just to find the right one for me. So I think after all, I didn't like anything I did.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'm very critical and I have to be kinder to myself because I've done a lot in, you know, in my life and I should be just looking at it as it's a process, you know, instead of a product. And that reminded me and it was a big slap in the face. Like you need to relax. You need to just focus on that, not the end product.
Yeah.
Just the process of what you just learned. You just learned so much out of painting 20 paintings.
Wow.
In many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I had to kind of go with a theme because if I didn't, I'd be kind of wasting my time. So my theme was the people that were in the community portraiture.
Okay.
And I kind of combined that with the textures of where I was in Colombia in the jungle. It wasn't completely jungle. It was very farm-like slash jungle. Very hot near the equator. So, really bright, you know, bullfrogs that are probably like three times as big as you, like your fist.
Yeah, sure.
A boa constrictor here and there, a scorpion here and there. Mm. You were fine, but you had to be careful, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the plants were incredible, like the colors and a ton of spiders and it was cool. But it was an old coffee plantation that they had, taken over. And there was a bunch of living places and places to stay.
So these are folks from all over the world.
Interesting. So, it was interesting. And I was probably the second oldest. Mm-hmm. Most of them were in their early 20s.
Yeah.
And I was the second oldest out of all of them.
So you talk about the process for people that might be listening and don't really understand what that means. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Your process is...
I suppose it's different for everyone, but...
It depends on what you do, right? So, like, if you're an artist and you're a painter or a sculptor, just an artist, you can dabble in everything or do everything. People have a process. For me, I like to look at other things and get inspired.
Mm-hmm.
Other paintings, maybe photographs. I'm a very visual person.
Sure.
And I'm also connected to emotion. So I need to hear the proper song or like be in that meditative state of being when I am making the art.
Yeah.
So I definitely always have music playing. Sometimes I don't and it's complete silence and it's very meditative, but I have to either have music or have it silent.
Yeah.
Also, I tend to paint a painting, takes me a month and then I paint over it.
Oh, wow.
Because I don't like to waste materials because it's expensive.
Yeah.
And I am done with it. I've painted paintings that I felt really connected to when I was painting them and then disconnected right after I was done.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care anymore about this. It was really all about the process for me.
Right.
Just the actual doing, and I got connected with material and it was great. But I've painted paintings where I overwork them, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't know when to stop.
Yeah.
And so a process for me is kind of like even writing ideas, having five big ideas that I want to include, like the word emerging,
uh-huh.
just five big ideas. And I think I've had these five big ideas my whole painting time.
Hmm.
I love incorporating all those, but I don't paint just one thing. I'm
yeah.
all over the map. And I think when you look at the internet, you see these kind of micromanaged paintings that are great for your home and decor,
yeah.
and they sell them on Wayfair.
Right.
And it's like a dime a dozen. And like, there's so many of them. And I don't find that to be very authentic, even
yeah.
though I think they might look cool in your home.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a different kind of
yeah,
art, because that's made by a factory.
Right. I've gone to, in fact, I think I saw this on the internet or something, that there are, you know, very talented artists and painters that fall into that world of just sort of churning out things that are, you know, pretty cool. I mean, you go into Home Goods or something and you'll see something, and you'll be like, yeah, I like that, you know, but at the same time, you know, maybe a real person painted it, but then it just got manufactured over and over again, and it loses, you know, its soul, which is clearly important.
Yeah. And then another thing that I've noticed, painters, and I'm not saying anything bad about this.
Mm.
People have figured out a way to make money
yeah.
and a buck and not even having to learn about art. They,
right.
they just kind of just picked it up as a hobby, and,
yeah.
and I'm happy for them
yeah.
because I think that's wonderful. I can't say I'm that type of person, but, for instance, I'll give you an example, paint nights,
yes.
Where you paint something to look exactly like the person that's painting it.
Sure.
You do exactly what that person's doing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people feel comfortable having never picked up a paintbrush and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's very inauthentic. And
yeah.
I think it takes the soul out of, and you know, everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if they're having a good time, just going there for the wine and
having
great, good for them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not trying to put it down. I'm just saying, like, you would never catch me at that type of
yeah.
thing. And if you do, I'd probably be painting something else.
Well, yeah. Well, it's funny you say that.
I'd be breaking the rules.
I attended one paint night in my lifetime, and I painted something else. So.
Yeah, same with me. And I think I gave it to my uncle for
yeah.
a Christmas present.
Yeah.
But, having said that, I am doing a paint day brunch mm-hmm. on Sunday.
Okay.
This coming Sunday, yeah. I do, it's not a business yet. It's just something I feel really, like, I think it's important. I had teamed up with Carlos Adria,
mm-hmm.
who is a Peruvian folk musician. Do you know of him?
I've heard the name. I don't know that
He is
know.
An amazing musician.
Yeah.
If you ever get an opportunity to see him, it's just an incredible experience to watch him play.
Hmm.
He's a very meditative, and he takes you kind of more on a journey, and it's got a little, I don't even want to say the word improv, because his practice is the process.
Mm-hmm.
So and he plays also with a band, a couple other, he plays in a jazz configuration. I think he works in one of the colleges and as a musicologist.
Yeah.
He has been a muse to me. And I think he reached out to me, a couple years ago. And then I ended up teaching his daughter a little paint class, like from my home.
Hmm.
We performed together once.
Yeah.
I think at Mechanics Hall on the radio for something.
Oh.
But then he came out with two albums that are now online, but he is going to be performing while I lead the group in an expressionist painting session based
okay.
on color and sound.
Oh, wow.
And it's also kind of, to me, sound healing,
yeah.
you know, which I'm really into.
Uh-huh.
So a little bit of both. So no, I'm not going to tell everybody what to paint, and the people that come in know it. I have a description
okay.
on my event. You can get the event on Eventbrite. Called Music as the Muse.
Music as the muse. Yeah. Okay. On Eventbrite.
So, I would like to do more. I just have to find the spaces.
Yeah.
And I would most definitely use Carlos for every single one I do until I find another artist who's got takes you on a journey instrumentally.
Yeah. Interesting concept. I like it. And like you said, it's not that cookie cutter. And again, I think both of us agree there's nothing wrong with that. It's entertaining. It's fun.
Yeah, it's great.
But the thing that you're doing here sounds a little more... Maybe the folks that are going to join you aren't artists either, but they're going to have a different kind of an experience, which I think is unique. It's something I haven't heard of yet, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, so I did it last year at the same place. And
yeah. You know. So how long will that hold, that like an event like that? How many hours?
12 to 3.
Oh, okay.
And Carlo will have 2 45-minute sessions of him playing.
Uh-huh.
And you do 2 paintings.
Oh, wow.
And all the paint... and everything, and all the materials are included.
Yeah, wow, that's cool. Yeah. Acrylic, obviously.
Yeah, because it has to dry.
Yeah, you get to work fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite medium to work in when you are painting?
I don't know. I love, when I was in Colombia, because it's so sticky and hot, I just tried Golden's slow-drying acrylics, which kind of act as an oil.
Yeah.
They slow-dry, and I kind of like that to build up layers. I like oil, but... I don't like the thinners and the mediums that you use, but I found one, I think it's by Gamble, and it's a Galkid that I really like, and then I use walnut oil, and then I use terpenoid, which is a more, you know, it's easier on the lungs, and but I don't really love oil painting because of the smell.
Yeah.
And I'm just, but I love oil painting.
Yeah.
I love clay. If I had it my way, I'd have everything. And I love throwing clay on a potter's wheel, but I don't get to do that because I don't have enough space.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It gets a little messy, I think, probably, right?
Yeah, and I love fabric, but I don't work in all these mediums at the same time. There was a show that I did at the Sprinkler Factory when it was still up and running. Great, great, great space put on by Louis Friere. And... he took it over. It used to be the old Worcester Artist Group.
Uh-huh.
And he rehabbed all those spaces. Beautiful. Biggest gallery. 3 galleries in one huge space. And we lost it. He lost it. We all lost it. It was a huge thing for the community. And I did one group show there, and I had painted for a year, and I had about 30 paintings that I was okay with.
Yeah.
And based on a theme that I came up with. It was called Untamed.
Sorry. Me. Oh, it's my diabetes.
Well, that's very important.
Sorry about that.
No, I was just going to say I ended up burning things for a while and getting really into burning fabric, and it was part of the whole show.
Oh, wow.
Burning bras.
Yeah.
And I made a sculpture out of that. And like, so, it was really smelly. But I really got into burning things for a while and used that with my painting, even like in my mixed media work. And like I said, if I just had more space at this point, I'm really trying to make do with what I have. And I think it's really important to get organized if you are a painter or an artist in a small space. But it would be ideal to have a bigger space.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly, like you mentioned oil, and I've used oil, and it is, I like it a lot, but the fumes, I just can't. And no matter what you try to, you know, like you were mentioning walnut oil and that sort of thing, there's always going to be something in there that smells weird and gives you a headache. And, you know, it's January and I got all the windows open trying to use oil paint because I don't want to.
I don't even open
myself.
My windows. Yeah. Isn't that horrible?
Yeah. Well, I'll get such a headache from it.
I'm probably like the unhealthiest person because I've been inhaling that stuff for so long.
Yeah. So. Certainly want to continue talking about art, but with the music thing, are you currently working on any projects?
Well, I've been kind of, I definitely need to perform. If I don't, it's just something that I've been doing for over 20, my whole life. And if I don't, I get very depressed. But after my Rocky had left, it was like, he moved to North Carolina. So I was used to working with somebody almost every other day, which is great. And we practiced, and he was my mentor, and he taught me a lot about guitar and like finger picking. And once he left, it was tough because then I had to, it wasn't even about reinventing myself. It was about finding people who have the time to collaborate with you.
Yeah.
And so what I do is I find songs that I really just love that I would just play out mm-hmm. at a bar or a club.
Yeah.
And things that I just know, it just sits really well with me, mostly soul and funk and mm-hmm. blues. And so I think 8 years ago, I met Clay Brown and I was at Dunny's, and I think I met him at like an open night. And mm-hmm. I just was like, Clay, what do you think about... And I think a friend had introduced... My friend Greg had introduced us. And I'm like, what do you think about, you know, like working together? And
yeah.
So we've been working together ever since.
Oh, cool.
Even if it's just once a month, they just came over last night and had a practice with me. And we just nailed 5 songs to play for Vincent's next week.
Okay.
I like playing at Vincent's because, one, you're performing for a crowd.
Yeah.
It's intimate.
Yeah.
And I've been playing there. It's like my living room.
Yeah.
And it's a very big part of the community for me.
Yeah.
Because all my friends create music there. And it's artistic. And it's... And aside from some of the chaos that can happen...
Yeah.
I can get through that yeah. as long as I'm singing. But I might not show up to your gig if it's really packed. And mm-hmm. I understand it can get really packed. But I think that's a great thing.
Yeah.
And I think people love to be shoulder to shoulder when they're listening to music. I think it's a very important thing to be able to have that energy that you get from each other yeah. when you're performing, as you would know.
Yeah.
But I don't find there's very many venues that I could, that would accept my music. Yeah. And then when I say accept, I play black music mm-hmm. and I'm a white singer.
Yeah.
I don't know if race has much to do with it or gender, but I find that where we live, there's not many blues clubs mm-hmm. that are open for just blues singers.
Yeah.
Or so I think Vincent's is that for me.
Yeah.
And Beatniks used to be an awesome place because they had that stage and it was smaller and intimate. And then I had another area. And then I loved Nick's.
Yeah.
Because that was really intimate.
Yeah.
I don't love to, I can't say I would even pack a room.
Yeah.
So say I wanted to play somewhere bigger in Worcester, they want that guarantee. Like, you could have sold all these tickets.
Mm-hmm.
I can't guarantee you any of my friends would come to my show that yeah. live in Worcester. They know I play. How many times has a friend said to you, oh, I'm going to come to your show, and they never come? You know, I'm a local. I consider myself a local player. I don't have to be. I could do it as a full-time job, but I can't because I have a full-time job.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but I have to balance my life in that way.
Yeah.
You know?
I would imagine that's quite a challenge, you know, balancing your teacher and then
let me ask you that question because I know you know about that.
Yeah,
it is challenging. When you're working full time as a teacher mm-hmm. with young students, or even working for the city full time yeah. in any way, mm-hmm. Working for the hospital, working for a police officer, like any yeah. kind of city job or any kind of job where you have to go in and work with people every day.
Yeah,
600 people I see a week. So, and I've been doing it for about 18 years now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to continue to do it because I signed up for this.
Mm-hmm.
All my money went into education.
Yeah.
And I believe it's like an important thing. And I feel whatever I do in balance of my life, as long as I'm giving back to the community, I feel really good.
Yeah.
Like, because I know I'm making a difference.
Right.
And I don't think I could work in a full-time job in any other way unless yeah. it was for the community.
Yeah.
You know, now I know that about myself. And maybe I would feel differently if I found that job, that art job. Like, I don't know. I could have been a graphic designer. I could have, you know, but I can't sit down all day either.
Yeah.
You know, I have to move.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. The juggling thing is definitely tricky. I'll find myself writing songs in my head while I'm working, which is...
You have to.
But I can't, you know, I have to pull the car over and
write
sing
it down?
Into the
yeah.
phone or write it down. And
good.
So many, you know, official documents have song lyrics written on the back of them.
Well, there's a process.
Yeah.
So we were talking about process, and that's exactly what I do. Like, if I'm driving and I hear something, I'll pull over and I'll write it down because I love to write. Mm-hmm. And, like, for me, writing it means it's, like, actually there.
Yeah.
I hate using my phone all day long.
Yeah.
Or recording it.
Yeah.
Recording something that will jog your memory.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the processes of artists and musicians that, like, I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
That are creative.
So when I was thinking of this the other day, and we were talking about Roger LaValle just a minute ago,
yeah.
and I was talking to him about this. And, you know, when you create something and you're in the process, for me anyway, and I imagine it's different for everyone, mm-hmm. when you're finished, the moment I'm finished with that thing, like I'll look at my painting and, it, you know, either congratulate myself or say you could have done that better or whatever, then I lose interest in that thing almost immediately. It and sort of this hole opens up that needs to be filled with the next thing, you know. Do you find that happens for you?
Absolutely. I wish there was a word for it, and I think there might be.
I think it's called being crazy.
it's about I'm going crazy.
Yeah.
But I don't really feel the sensation of being fulfilled even mm-hmm. when I work out.
Yeah.
I'm not fulfilled. And I thought it was a spiritual thing for a while or a disconnect with something. But what I found was I just have so many ideas
mm-hmm.
and I feel very ADHD.
Yeah.
Very hyper about them. And like, for me, it used to be like, I got to capture this. And I'll lose sleep over it if mm-hmm. I don't do it. But
yep.
of course, as you get older, you're just tired. You just can't, you have to take care of your body more as you get older.
Yeah.
And because if you take care of your body and you need your mind, and for the work I do, I have to be creative 24 hours a day. It's my job to be
yeah.
creative and to teach people how to be creative and to actually produce. And there's a reason behind it. And like, I can't mess up.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. I'm not perfect, but like, you know, I feel like I'm under such a magnifying glass that I just need a release.
Yeah.
And so my mind, the way it works is, oh my God, I have to do this and I have to do that. And then you're physically tired. You're drained from
yeah.
thinking about it all the time. And then when you go and you paint something, or you go and you play that song, it's not the same. And you just kind of give up after 5 minutes because you're like, oh my gosh, now I'm all drained. And that's not going to work for your favor. You need to take care of yourself spiritually,
yeah,
mentally. You have to eat well. You have to work out. Your physical self is so important. You have to figure out how to release that energy physically. Everything is in sync. It's like we're a tree. And we and even our relationships with other people play such a huge role in our creativity
mm-hmm.
and what's going on in so many deep ways. And I feel I don't have time for people who aren't being their authentic self.
Yeah.
And I think COVID was great in so many ways for me. It was so hard.
Wait a minute.
But I think I learned a lot during COVID
yeah.
and being an artist.
I just haven't heard anyone say that COVID was great. But
as an artist,
I'm just joking. But yeah.
it stunk.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Yeah. I think.
But if there was any kind of silver lining that came out of it for me, I learned that how to put boundaries up.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people where I kind of just like everybody mm-hmm. and I like to reach out to people,
sure.
you know, and keep my friends close. And then I was like, wait a minute, this isn't feeling good anymore. This person feels a little toxic to me.
Mm-hmm.
I had to put up a boundary and just like, I learned about boundaries
yeah.
during that 2 year span.
Yeah.
'Cause I found out how it felt to be alone and feel lonely and
yeah.
kind of feel good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something where I'm like, I don't have time for drama
yeah.
with people.
Right.
And I'd rather be painting or I'd rather be writing and being in my own self. I'm
yeah.
not a loner. I love people. I work with people. But when you do, you need that downtime.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not saying COVID was a good thing.
No, I was kidding.
At all.
It's just kind of.
I would trade that experience not to have had that. But
yeah.
I think it made a stronger people, and if you're a creative person, it definitely like switched your game up
yeah.
quite a bit as a musician or an artist, and it continues to right now.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, a lot about the performance art world. When I said, you know, when I say that, I mean like music and that sort mm-hmm. of thing. It took such a hit from the whole COVID thing. I remember for me being on Facebook, I'd go live like 4 nights a week and just play the guitar and drink wine. And I didn't really
yeah.
care how good or bad it was. It was just more about like trying to offer that to other people that were maybe lonely or whatever, but also, you know, have an experience where you were able to.
Yes.
So
I remember
hard, right?
feeling so bad that I needed to perform that I don't even perform on guitar by myself.
Yeah.
I actually played at the Stomping Ground and I played 3 hours worth of material.
Wow.
Just so I could perform.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I'm any good at guitar, but
yeah.
I remember I just, I don't, it was like a dream because that's so not like me to do that.
Yeah.
I'd rather someone else play guitar.
Yeah.
But I did it because I just needed to play and I couldn't play with anyone.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was very real.
Yeah.
It was very real.
Did you find, well, now that we're talking about COVID, did you find yourself painting more during that period too, or?
God, I must have blocked so much out. I was working online trying to teach kids how to make art all day long.
Yeah.
I was so drained and so stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And my job completely changed. I didn't know. I felt so under the microscope. I was in people's homes.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of depression happen. And I think because of that, I was severely depressed because I was watching these kids struggle really badly. And also my daughter was graduating that year from high school and she didn't even have a graduation.
Yeah.
And then my partner that I was with, his daughter was a COVID baby, which we say if they were supposed to enter their first year in kindergarten, but they're online.
Yeah.
So I think I was going through a huge depression that year. I don't remember what I did for painting. I think I did some live paintings, like, you know, just to, I always paint.
Yeah.
But I wasn't showing any work anywhere or getting ready for a show.
Sure.
But I was definitely just trying to complete a process or be involved with a process of painting.
Yeah.
But I was very lucky because I met my partner a couple months before the shutdown.
Oh.
So I had established a relationship with some, maybe not even a couple months, maybe half a year before.
Uh-huh.
And I had established a relationship with somebody, so I had someone to talk to about it, and I wasn't completely alone. So my heart went out to the people who were completely alone.
Yeah.
And I just can't even imagine being alone. I was very lucky.
Yeah.
And I didn't get COVID. Never tested positive in my
life. Oh, really?
Oh. Not saying I never had it.
Yeah, right.
But I feel like I'm one of the lucky people that got out of it. And I know a lot of people lost loved ones and I didn't, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had it four times.
Wow.
three that weren't so bad. And then just recently one more bout of it, but.
Well, we still can get it, but not.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, you know, what I kind of learned from that experience myself was you know, it's coming for all of us and how you're going to die someday isn't really up to you to know or just, well, at any rate, you know, it's sort of like, I'm not going to worry about that anymore. I don't want to, I'm not going to offend anyone or get in anyone's space if they don't, don't get me sick. But just, I mean, it's, we can't do that again. I, in my opinion, I just think.
There's always going to be something.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. There's always going to be something. So, how can people hear the music that you've made?
I guess for now it would be going to my Facebook page, which is Carrie Anderson Music.
Okay.
I still have Facebook.
iTunes or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. You can go to... No, the goal was to record an album this year with a friend who hasn't gotten back to me yet, to record an album of music that I've written on guitar in the past 15 years.
Mm.
At first, I reached out to Roger about it. I was like, Roger, I think I want to record. But then I was like, Roger, I don't know if I'm... I kept going back and forth with them. I'm like, I don't know if I still connect with this. And sometimes it can be very traumatic to open up those old songs and wounds. But then I changed my mind and I said, I think it would be great.
Mm-hmm.
But my friend who has a studio said it hasn't gotten back to me yet. So that's on the burner. And then I met someone else that I just started songwriting with just for fun.
Yeah.
I just constantly need that other person like to be a catalyst of the guitar part because I'm really fluid with my vocals and styles and stylings and melodies and lyrics, but I can't keep up with the guitar playing.
Yeah.
It takes me way longer. So I like to work with a guitarist, or a piano player.
Mm-hmm.
But you can find my stuff that I've done probably 8 years ago on Mike Lynch, me, and the Little Sugar and the Big Spoonful. That's what we call ourselves. And we still periodically play at Vincent's, like once every couple months.
Yeah.
When he's not on tour. No, I'm happy for him. But we did an album with Roger.
Uh-huh.
We recorded it at Roger, and then it got mixed at Woolly Mammoth.
Yep.
David Westner.
Oh, yeah.
Produced, mixed it and mastered it. And you can find it on Homeo
iTunes?
Bandcamp.
Bandcamp, okay. Yeah.
Bandcamp, yep. Little Sugar. Did we ever make money off of it? No. Is it a great album? Yes.
Yeah.
It's a great rock blues album. And it has some grit to it.
Yeah.
But I'm always ready to do another one, Mike, if you're listening to this. So there's that. And then I just have my own Spotify. Not Spotify account. My own...
There's SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.
Yeah.
And I just have my process work on there.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff I recorded on my GarageBand,
sure.
You know, like from years ago.
Yeah.
I think Craig Rodding's on that too.
Yeah.
I like keeping like a... Kind of like a journal. I feel like art and music is just a part of your life, and I like leaving it on this earth. I think Duncan, our mutual friend Duncan Arsenal, once asked me a question about, you know, why do you make art? We got on a topic of making art, which can be music or visual art.
Sure.
And I said, I just want to leave something behind.
Yeah.
Like when you think about the history of art.
Mm-hmm.
And music, you know, like it's a very tangible thing.
Yeah.
I mean, when you go to an art museum and you see these relics and these amazing pieces, it teaches you about humanity.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. And who we were at that time. You look at the pyramids and it's like, how did a physical person do this?
Mm-hmm.
But like, I think they're going to look at us now and they're like, what happened to human beings?
Yeah.
They don't have much, you know, that's physical.
Right.
And so the physical part, leaving something physically behind, like an artifact, is huge for me.
Mm-hmm.
Huge.
Yeah.
That's just so important.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that. I, you know, we were talking about being alone a lot. And of course, I'm alone when I'm at work, sometimes in the car. And I have these very interesting conversations with myself, out loud. One of the things I was thinking about the other day was this idea of leaving things behind. And, you know, because, well, for me at least, I don't want to speak for everyone else, but you're creating something and you do see that there is, you can monetize music and art and that sort of thing. And so maybe for a while you think, oh, I can do this and get paid, you know. But I think for me, and it sounds like for you, it's more important to just give it away almost when you can. Because what good is, you know, a painting that you've done if no one sees it? It's like that tree in the woods that falls and there's no one there to hear it, you know? So
it's interesting. I have a lot of friends in the gallery world and, you know, it's about making that consistent series of work.
Yeah.
And like never changing.
Mm-hmm.
Like always keeping within the realm of that. It's a good challenge.
Yeah.
But I don't last like more than 5 pieces.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I'm done, I'm bored, done, I'm gonna move on.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but I don't care what galleries would think.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't like your work, they don't like your work.
Yeah.
It's not a biggie to me.
Yeah.
It's very subjective.
Yeah.
Art is very subjective. So, you know, you connect with it at that time. There's been paintings, you know, like Rothko. There was a time when I wasn't even feeling anything when I looked at Rothko. Now I'm like, I love Rothko, you mm-hmm. know, like very minimalist, abstract, contemporary work.
Yeah.
And I never thought I'd be really into contemporary work. And now I'm like moving towards that, but I like a lot of different things. I just change with me as a human being. My styles change. And I think it's healthy to explore so many different styles and mediums.
Yeah.
I think you definitely should, if you're an ADHD person and you really like have so many ideas. And I think even as a child, for me, I suffer from emotional issues. I suffer from depression.
Mm.
I'm finally taking control of that. I've gone through a lot of therapy for a lot of things like trauma, a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think art has also been a very, it saved my life.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
kind
absolutely.
Of thing. It's a therapy to me. So, I mean, I use it in so many different ways and I see it every day in my students.
Yeah.
That it saves your life. It can save your life.
Yeah.
Literally. So I give props to the art world. I give props to who has steered and supported me going this rocky, crazy path.
Yeah.
But it's in balance with you, right? So if this is what you need to do and you just have to do it, you have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a calling. It's like a need. It's like, water.
Yeah. For me, it feels like this thing that is inside of you that it never shuts up, you know, and mm-hmm. you can't ignore it. People try, but that's never a good thing, you know. Mm-hmm. You talked about, you know, taking care of yourself a few minutes ago mm-hmm. from the spiritual side of it. Mm-hmm. What kind of things do you practice in order to sort of gain calm in your life? And
definitely meditation. I think lately I've been into a lot of sound healing, mm-hmm. which you can Google online and maybe Spotify. There's a bunch of sound healing artists who play the hanjram and sing with it. I love vocal work. So for me, I connect with vocal. If I hear that vocal, that just perfect vocal for me, like once I find a sound healer with that vocal, I'm like, okay, that just sets me, lowers my blood pressure, lowers everything. I've worked on visual medication, like before bed, like, you know, you're laying in your bed and you put something on your screen or with sound mm-hmm. and you just breathe. And for about 10 minutes before you go to sleep, it helps you sleep better. And then I do sound. I don't do it anymore because I can fall asleep better now because I couldn't shut my brain off.
Yeah.
You know, like on your iPhone or whatever, you get Spotify, you can get the sleep sounds.
Yeah, I put it on my TV.
So many different sleep sounds.
Green noise. And it's on YouTube. It's a 24-hour nonstop channel of just green noise. Mm-hmm. And the screen on your TV goes black, because I don't want the TV on in there. But I love it.
Yeah.
You know, and I have tinnitus anyway from rock and roll and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So
it
helps, you know. But it's, that sound thing. It's great. It really is, yeah. So part of this podcast, if you will, is for visually impaired folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think hopefully anyone will be listening to this, but I know that what I thought would be interesting, maybe if you would like to try to describe one of the paintings that you've done in a way that, you know, folks that...
Well, I taught a blind student for years.
Okay.
And I think I learned so much, and he was from kindergarten to sixth grade.
Uh-huh.
And it was such a great experience. And I think my language with him was basically a very tactile language.
Yeah.
So every word, vocabulary word, I was trying to tell him that was in my painting or in a project, I would assimilate it with a texture.
Okay.
So I'd have like a texture board and I would be like, how, you know, like, can you create art using the sound? What would it feel like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, give him a material to use, you know, like, but not confine him, having him be able to choose, you know. So I'd use a lot of like sound, texture. But to describe mine, I would definitely use sound and textures. Like, mm-hmm. if I was going to explain it to someone who couldn't see, I would probably have to show them a song about how it would look with color. Because that's kind of what I'm kind of experimenting with right now, which is really great that you brought that up.
Yeah.
Is sound and color.
Yeah.
And maybe a song, the textures of that, because there's textures in music.
Yeah, of course.
As well as in, you know, painting and color. So if you can't see color, I could give you a texture to feel it.
Uh huh.
You know, and I would probably, if I was with that person, I would have them feel some textures.
If you can, what would be a good example of you can choose the color, but do you have a color in mind that you could associate with a texture? You know, I guess it would be different.
Yeah, I mean, and it also has to do with maybe a sound.
Mm-hmm.
So if I painted something that was multicolored with the spectrum of all the colors, I don't really think it's necessary for someone that doesn't see to have to even know about color, because you can feel an emotion through any way.
Of course,
You know, so I don't know how I would, I don't know if it's relevant if they've never seen color.
Yeah.
You know, then...
Well, you know, it's interesting.
They can
about
feel
that,
something.
You know, you said that emotion and color sometimes, and, you know, you think, you know, green with envy, right? Or you're very blue, you're sad, or you're red hot, mad, you know, like, I suppose for a person who can't see color, that a particular emotion can certainly sort of let them know what it might be, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've seen things online where blind painters actually do use color. And like, so they would associate this texture, and I think they'd have some kind of indicator mm-hmm. with that color. So like there is some kind of a simulation with the color and
sure.
the texture.
Yeah.
And that's how they get the colors or the feelings. So mm-hmm. you can paint with color, you know, if you're blind. It's just you have to assimilate it with something else.
Yeah.
Like, you have to know what this is,
yeah,
you know, or...
Yeah, right.
It's such a interesting topic.
Yeah.
And conversation to have, and I would love to have this with a non-seeing person.
Yeah, sure.
An
yeah.
adult, because I work with kids too, so yeah. like, it would be interesting to have it with an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is so such a crazy
yeah.
idea.
Well, that being said, you can be reached on Facebook. You said that.
Yeah, Carrie Anderson Music, or I'm on Instagram. I think it's Anderson K68 K Carrie Anderson. Just if you Google me, you probably could find me anywhere.
Yeah, I can look it up, and at the end of the show, I can pop yeah. it in there for you. But so you would be that'd be something that would interest you if a listener wanted to reach out to you.
And, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
That'd yeah.
Be, yeah. Hopefully that'll happen for you. Then that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, this is so cool. Thank you so much.
It's so fun. And so your work that you do in life, too, kind of like is siding mine. So it's great. And I think these podcasts are so important.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, and you know what? I mean, I think before today, even though we've known of each other, we've only just sort of run into each other at Vincent's and that sort of thing. So to sit down with you and really get to know you today, and you know, who's ever going to be listening to this will get to know you too. So
yeah,
thank you so, so much.
You're welcome.
That's a wrap. You've been listening to Beautiful Minds. I'm your host, Tom Hurley. And I just want to say that I'm grateful for the universe and for whatever put me here. And I'm grateful for all of the gifts that it's given me. And mostly, I'm grateful for you being here with me today. This program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Please remember, we would love to hear from you. Are there any local musicians or artists that you'd like to hear? Call or email us with any suggestions or general feedback at 508-797-1117, or you can email us at info@audiojournal.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Are you a senior who is dealing with vision loss? Would you like to learn about advocacy efforts on behalf of seniors who are blind? And about support calls, where you can talk with other seniors who are also dealing with vision loss? If so, join us, the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. To learn more, visit our website, www.aavl-blind-seniors.org.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Everyday, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is All That Is Gold Does Not Glitter by J.R.R. Tolkien. All that is gold does not glitter. Not all those who wander are lost. The old that is strong does not wither. Deep roots are not reached by the frost. From the ashes a fire shall be woken. A light from the shadows shall spring. Renewed shall be the blade that was broken. The crownless again shall be king. You've been listening to Everyday Poems for Everyday, sponsored by Audio Journal, and read by me, Nikki Whichelow. Thanks for listening. May your life be filled with poetic wonder.